The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They are not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice.
Today, on the lab report, we're going to talk about food additives.
MSG, nitrates, nitrites, food coloring.
What's in your food?
The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report.
Man, you're having a tough time over there.
Pollen.
You're having
it's the spring.
A tough time. If you tell me that you're crushing it today, I will know once and for all you're a liar. Hello!
Hi, Michael Chapman. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Patty Devers?
Congested.
Ah.
But all is well. There are worse things in the world. I am still crushing it.
Playing hurt, I see. Or
nope,
here.
I'm here.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks for being here. Thanks to everyone for being here to this show called The Lab Report. It's a podcast where we talk about things like functional medicine, specialty lab testing, integrative therapeutics, and the like.
And we're so thankful that you're here, and hopefully you would have subscribed to this show. If you're new, welcome. And maybe you can head over to iTunes or Spotify, hit the subscribe button, rate, review, leave us some stars, and things like that.
We like those stars. If you have feedback, you can send the feedback to podcast@gdx.net. That's our email.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the emails.
We love them. And we're not going to talk about pollen and seasonal allergies today. We're going to talk about food additives.
And it should be said that food additives, this is a really big topic.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of them, right?
Thousands.
Thousands of food additives.
Mm-hmm.
Which begs the question, why do we have so many food additives? What are we doing with all these things?
Well, right? there's a lot of reasons for that, right? So I think the most common one is to preserve shelf life.
General. Preservatives.
Yeah, if you want to ship it across the country, you got to make sure that this is still a stable food when it gets there.
Yeah. But they're not all preservatives.
Nope.
We've got food colorings.
Mm-hmm.
We've got flavorings, which also begs the question, why are we adding flavorings to food, right? This is kind
of
interesting.
Such an interesting point. And then there are things to thicken some of the food. So it's really interesting. And it really does beg the question, are all of these things really needed, right?
Well, it depends, I think. If you want my take on it.
Go ahead.
I think part of the problem is that when you take food in its original state.
Right.
And then you process it repeatedly over and over again,
uh-huh.
break it down to its raw chemical components, and then synthesize it back into quote-unquote food,
uh-huh.
it tends to not taste like anything.
It's really interesting, right?
So in order to take this chemistry set on your plate and make it taste like food again, you have to add flavorings and colorings to make it look like food.
Yeah, it's really circular logic that makes no sense. But rather than stay on your soapbox, Michael, why don't we teach and talk about some of these food preservatives and additives. I know there are thousands. Let's just choose a couple and talk about what they do in your body.
Well, let's start with my favorite.
Which is your favorite?
MSG.
That's your favorite?
It is my favorite. I mean, despite the fact that it may or may not give me heart palpitations and headaches, it does tend to taste good.
Well,
right? It makes things taste better.
Well, let's back up and say, what does MSG stand for?
Monosodium glutamate.
Right. So it's really just the salt of the non-essential amino acid glutamic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And they use it because it has very specific salty zestiness, right? So you see it a lot in things like soups or Chinese food is probably the most important example that people know.
Yeah, that's the one that gets bantered for better or for worse,
right.
Fair or not fair. That's
fair.
What you often hear is associated with MSG, but it's in everything, man. It's not just in those things.
True.
It's in a lot of products.
So what does it do in the body?
Well, I'll give you my take. I'll give you my take.
Oh, my gosh.
So when I think of monosodium glutamate, and you just mentioned it, the thing that sticks out there is glutamate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And glutamate is a neurotransmitter in and of itself. And so the primary association I have with MSG is the NMDA receptor, which is a glutamate receptor.
Which is excitatory.
It's an excitatory receptor, and so it leads to all different physiologic changes based on that. And that's where we get into the terrain of heart palpitations and a lot of the other symptomatology, especially in people who are sensitive to MSG, you start to see.
Things like flushing and, like you said, sweating and palpitations, those are common for people who have reactions to MSG.
Well, and you know, Patty, I'm looking through PubMed here, and it's kind of interesting because I've got a lot of information on the NMDA receptor
mm-hmm.
and what that does systemically and the fact that overexcitation of the NMDA receptor seems to be neurotoxic. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot of direct connections here between MSG and those endpoints.
Which then begs the question, like, how common is this sensitivity to MSG? And if you think about it, so the FDA regulates some of these food additives, right? Things like MSG. And they regard it as, generally regarded as safe, uh-huh. GRAS, yeah. right? And yeah. so they use it because table salt has about 40% sodium, MSG, not as much, probably 12%, and mm-hmm. they consider it safe, mm-hmm. right? And so it really comes down to, if there's not a lot in PubMed, is this really a thing? How common is it?
And there's the one aspect that you're alluding to, which is the immediate hypersensitivity to MSG, which some people have demonstrated. But then there's also the concern around long-term consequences to MSG consumption on average, because it does seem to stimulate the NMDA receptor, and stimulating the NMDA receptor tends to lead to these neurotoxic outcomes. And so it's certainly something that should be looked into further.
One parting thought on MSG.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the term umami?
Sure. Yeah, it's one of our main tastes. It's like one of our flavors that we taste on our tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's highly associated with MSG.
Yeah, and it's responsible for like the savory taste, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I think we covered MSG pretty well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, watch out for it. Might cause some problems. Generally try to avoid it, in my household, at least.
Okay.
That's my recommendation. So we've got a good pace going here. Why don't we move on to the next one?
We're
going to
talk about nitrites and nitrates.
Cool. So, Patty, I go to the store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I pick up a package of bacon.
Yum.
And I happen to notice that on that bacon, on the label, it says, no added nitrates. So it begs the question, what is this? Why are we adding this stuff? Why are we not adding it? What's going on?
Well, a nitrate is a nitrogen with 3 oxygen molecules. And a nitrite is a nitrogen with 2 oxygen molecules. And those are often added to meats to help preserve them and cure them and slow down their aging process, mainly by way of being kind of antimicrobial.
And one of the big concerns out there is that a lot of these products, and specifically we think about bacon, we think about hot dogs and other preserved porks, cured porks, is that these additional nitrates can turn into nitrites or other nitrogen compounds such as nitrosamines. And there's been some concern in the literature around associations with nitrosamines, these nitrates, nitrites, and potential cancer risk.
Well, here's the problem.
What's the problem?
Nitrates and nitrites can occur naturally in vegetables and in your soil and your water. So if they can occur naturally, why should we be concerned about adding them to other things like meats?
Well, I think the answer to that would be a dose response curve, right? Things occur naturally in foods, and then there's the addition of things on top of food beyond what normally naturally occurs to where you can disrupt physiology.
But then I think, isn't nitric oxide good for us, you know, from a cardiovascular standpoint? Isn't that a good thing?
Sure, that helps vasodilation, but that's not the only compound that can theoretically be formed by these nitrates and nitrites. That's where the concern comes in. And there is an ongoing raging war in the literature right now around this, where, you know, they're essentially, they're saying that the literature is inconclusive, which is true. You know, it depends on what article you pulled up. I just pulled one up that was a meta-analysis around nitrates, nitrites, and nitrosamines intake and risk of gastric cancer. They found that nitrate consumption seemed to not be significantly associated with cancer risk, but nitrites and nitrosamines were in a dose response fashion. So again, just one article in a whole slew of articles, and suffice it to say, there's some competing interests out
there. There's a lot of competing interests, and there used to be all of those articles written about meat causing cancer, right?
Yeah.
Red meat causing cancer, and they were saying it was by way of nitrites and nitrates. And even when we spoke to Gabrielle Lyon, she kind of debunked some of those literature studies as well. So to your point, ongoing raging debate.
Well, and the other funny thing, too, is that when they say on the label, no added nitrates, they're talking about they haven't added something like sodium nitrate, but they've instead added like celery powder, which in and of itself has a high amount of nitrates
in it.
So it's one of those things where, you know, you have to really understand what's going on from both a commercial and marketing standpoint.
Yeah, food labels are tricky.
Labels are tricky. You know, you tend to learn a lot just by turning that food around and reading off the ingredients that are in there. I don't think many people are doing that as much as they should, because I think it really does teach you all of the different chemicals that might be going into what you're eating. And so it makes me think about a little game we could play.
Okay.
Sort of like a name that food.
What do you mean?
Well, I pull up a label, a random label, and you try to guess what food I'm describing. Up for the challenge?
Let's go.
So to make this a little bit more interesting, I'm not just going to read right down the label because I think that might be a dead giveaway as far as understanding the main ingredients. So I'm going to kind of jump around the ingredient label, okay?
Yeah, because the main ingredients are listed first.
And just to make it more suspenseful, let's put a little bit of time up on the clock
here. Oh, gosh.
All right. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. Soybean oil. Salt.
Salt. Okay.
Yeast nutrients, including calcium carbonate, calcium sulfate, monocalcium phosphate, ammonium sulfate, and citric acid.
Makes me think this might be something baked. Go ahead.
Hydrogenated vegetable oil.
Oh, yeah.
Soy lecithin.
Oh, say no more. Emulsifier.
Corn syrup.
Sweet.
Water.
Just wet.
Yeast.
See? Baked goods.
Vitamin B3. Vitamin B1.
Okay.
Vitamin B2. Folic acid.
More vitamins.
Unbleached enriched wheat flour.
Yes. Baked goods.
Do you have any guesses?
A bagel? No. Donut?
Nope. Dough conditioner.
See?
Including mono and diglycerides, sodium stearoyl lactylate, ethoxylated mono and diglycerides, and ascorbic acid. All right, Patty, your time's up. Do you have any final guesses?
Can I sort of think this out a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, so you mentioned corn syrup, which is sweet. You talked about soy lecithin, which is like an emulsifier, and so is like soybean oil. These are emulsifiers. You talked about wheat, dough proteins. As you were rambling all of those things off, I was thinking baked goods. Something that's baked that's sweet. Chocolate chip cookies. Really?
Really.
Can I have another guess?
Sure.
Bagels. Oh, jeez. All right, one last guess.
Sure, okay.
Is it, like, just white bread?
You got it!
What?
You got it! Good job.
Thank you.
Good job.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Why are they putting corn syrup in bread?
There's a lot of things in that label
that
I ask the question, why?
Yeah, like, why are they putting all these chemicals in our food? You rattled off a list of really hard to pronounce chemicals, and why are they putting them in our food?
Yeah, some of them gave me a couple speed bumps, for sure.
Yeah, but you did well.
Thanks.
But something else that you'll often see on a food label are sulfites.
Yeah, and if we do like a word association with respect to sulfites, the first thing that comes to my mind is wine.
I was just going to say that.
Oh, I should have let you say it.
Thanks.
But perhaps that's not really fair because it seems that there are sulfites in a lot of different things.
Lots of things, like meats, for example. Mm-hmm. A lot of sulfites in meat. You wouldn't think of that because what sulfites do, in essence, amongst many of their functions, they inhibit microbial growth and therefore food doesn't deteriorate as quickly. And they can also enhance color. They're enzyme inhibitors and antioxidants. So they do a lot of things and they're in a lot of foods, though I think of wine first.
Yeah. But just as an example, I just Googled it and went to WebMD.
Okay.
Good old WebMD.
That's right.
And guess what? They have a list of foods that may contain sulfites. And that includes things like baked goods, soup mixes, jams, canned vegetables, pickled foods, gravies, dried fruit, potato chips, trail mix, beer and wine, vegetable juices, sparkling grape juice, apple cider, lemon juice and lime juice, tea, condiments, molasses, guacamole.
Yikes.
And maraschino cherries. How do you feel about maraschino cherries?
I hate maraschino cherries.
Really? You
hate
them?
I hate them.
Why?
I hate them. They just taste like plastic to me.
Who knew? We just stumbled on something. Who knew maraschino cherries could be so polarized? Do you think you have a camp of people that are with you that hate maraschino cherries?
Oh, yeah. I'm quite sure of that.
On the top of the milkshake? You're not like...
Gross. I always throw the cherries out. What's even worse are those chocolates that have cherries in them. Ugh. Yeah. Chocolate covered cherries. Gross.
I wonder why they're called maraschino cherries. Who's maraschino? He's getting a lot of claim to fame here.
I'm going to Google it.
Man, Patty's really down on the maraschino cherry. I mean, I didn't expect this to be such a huge issue. I kind of hope maraschino's not a region of the world because then Patty might be alienating a whole group of people and maybe destroying their economy.
Got it.
What is it?
Sorry, Croatia.
Uh-oh.
It's a type of cherry that's grown in Croatia called Muraska cherry. And then after they pick it and they start to preserve it, they put it in this liqueur. And then it's now known as the maraschino cherry. So it's in Croatia and Dalmatia. So, sorry. I'm sure they're all very nice people, and it might just be the liqueur that I'm turned off to. So I'm sorry, Croatia.
You just dramatically reduced the world's supply of Shirley Temples.
You're welcome. Okay, so maraschino cherries are high in sulfites, mm-hmm. amongst many other foods.
Many.
Why do we care about
According
sulfites?
According to WebMD.
That's right. Why do we care?
Well, first and foremost, there's people out there that are very sensitive to sulfites, mm-hmm. Hypersensitive to sulfites, in that they create what seems like IgE-mediated responses.
Like what?
Including skin reactions, such as hives, but also things like throat swelling, migraines, sneezing, coughing.
Whoa.
Anaphylaxis is
Yikes.
Rare, but happens. Yeah, it's considered one of the top 9 food allergens. Well, and aside from the people who might have an actual true sensitivity or reaction to it, there might be other concerns from a health consequence perspective. Right, Patty?
Right. And I will also point out that the FDA does consider sulfites to be GRAS, generally recognized as safe compounds, which is why they're allowed to be in our foods. But even at these GRAS levels, they can inhibit the growth of some really potentially beneficial bacteria within our microbiome.
Yes, studies have shown that it inhibits the growth of certain beneficial gut flora, which makes sense because we're using these agents as bactericidal
right.
and
mm-hmm.
fungicidal. So
yeah.
why would we not think that there might be some action there within our own microbiome? And all of this might sound really scary. We're not trying to scare
yes,
people
you are.
Out there. Well, okay, maybe a little bit, but just to help provide information to become more attentive and aware and look at some of the ingredients on those labels that you're purchasing.
And so you can Google them.
And these are things that you can avoid, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are foods that will not have sulfites. There are food that, you know, doesn't have added nitrates, nitrites, all that sort of stuff. So one more thing that might be maybe more difficult to avoid in mm-hmm. certain foods is food colorings.
I mean, have you looked at the label, the food label on something like Fruit Loops?
No, honestly, I haven't. Not allowed in the house. So, but I can see where you're getting at. I think one of the dead giveaways for when you're trying to identify a color additive
'Kay.
Is the fact that it has the color in the
There's
actual
a color
word.
There.
Yeah.
yeah.
So if you see something that says blue or green, you can pretty well assume that that's a food color.
Mm-hmm.
But they're complicated because there are things like FD&C blue number 1 and 2, FD&C yellow number 5 and 6, and orange B and citrus red number 2. So these are kind of confusing. So you just look for that color.
Okay. So when you see that FD&C before any kind of a food dye, that stands for the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, right? It's the act that allows you to put various colors in food and cosmetics, for example,
uh-huh.
or supplements or drugs. And then when you further break that down, sometimes you'll see the word lake
yeah.
in there,
yeah.
right? And so there are dyes, FD&C dyes, and then there are lakes, which is a strange word to use for
it
a color additive, right?
Yeah.
So the dyes can dissolve in water. So it's usually things like powders or granules or things like that. But then there are lakes, and lakes are added colors that are water insoluble. Right? So they stay as fats and oils, and that's things that you might think about, like when they color margarine, for example.
Right, to make it look like it's butter.
Yeah, to give it a color.
Or like cheddar cheese, which typically is white, is it not?
Right.
And they actually add coloring to make
mm-hmm.
it look yellow.
That's right.
And from a clinical perspective, I think a lot of this has been somewhat empiric evidence, has been mm-hmm. observational studies with clinicians who are, you know, more focused on practicing more of a holistic approach to childhood wellness, have made this causal association around food additives, food colorings, and behavior changes in children.
Mm-hmm.
Some evidence in the literature has supported that. And certainly, you know, like a lot of other things, there's been some inconclusive literature that's been published as well.
Right. And although there are some studies that suggest that they're carcinogenic, right, there's also some conflicting studies that say that may not be that the dyes themselves are carcinogens, but they could be synergistic to other carcinogens.
Which still might be a problem. You know, one very weird thing that I remember reading back in like 2005
okay.
was that there was this study done where they had rats with spinal cord injuries. Don't
what?
Ask
what?
Me how they did
okay.
that. And so what they found accidentally was that if they gave these rats FD&C blue number whatever, blue number 1 or 2,
okay.
they gave them blue food coloring, it helped reduce the inflammation around the spine and actually promoted repair of the spinal damage.
Wait a minute.
There was only one problem.
What?
The rats turned blue. True story.
I have two problems with this. First, who are these people conducting this study? Who's spending the money conducting the study? Number two.
Mad people.
Are you now saying that there's someone promoting artificial coloring and dyes to treat spinal cord injury. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that. I'm telling you the facts of what this article stated. And I'm just pulling up this right now. It says, it's in anything blue, in M&Ms and Gatorade and Jell-O. We eat 100 million pounds a year in the United States, so we already know there's no toxicity.
What?
I mean, other than potentially turning blue. So, in general, I mean, we've got different opinions on this, like we do with a lot of things. It depends, blah, is sort of like a regular statement around here. I definitely try to avoid food additives in my household with my family. I think that's really important. And the good news is that a lot of times they're not being needed anymore. Where we found alternatives and substitutes, you know, you'll see things like beetroot being used as a coloring. You'll see, you know, other things, beta carotene, stuff like that. So they might be on their way out, perhaps.
But I think what we can all get behind and agree on is that it's really important, and I think we've gone a far way here to raise awareness around reading a food label. If there are words there that you don't understand, go look, go do your research.
Right, and the only place that you're going to find these things is in the processed foods. So again, as always, as much as possible, try to just eat more raw foods rather than the processed foods, and you're not going to have to worry about these additives. And one last rant, Patty.
Go ahead.
Artificial and natural flavors.
Right. What's the difference between those two?
Well, very basically, artificial flavors are man-made chemicals. Mm-hmm. Natural flavors are chemicals that are extracted from some sort of plant or animal source. Mm-hmm. They, again, are quote-unquote generally regarded as safe, but there is a ton of different loopholes, what can be used, and the quality assurance testing on these different agents, then they don't have to be disclosed what they are, where they came from, any of that information. So again, another reason why, in my opinion, avoidance of processed foods that contain either of those is better.
Couldn't you make the argument, though, that natural flavorings are also made up of chemicals?
For sure. I mean, you could make the argument that at the end of the day, everything is made up of chemicals, right? Uh-huh. But it's at what proportion are those chemicals in your food, right? If you're eating a tomato, then it has a proportion of chemicals that are tomato. That's a food. When we start extracting and singling out certain chemicals and adding them and subtracting them and things like that, then we're essentially getting away from what I would consider a whole food diet.
Okay, are you done?
Yeah. Next time on The Lab Report, Dr. Nicole Avena.
Yeah, she's back, and she's going to talk about what to eat when you're trying to get pregnant.
You've been listening to The Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net.
You know what's interesting?
What?
I wonder how much of why we like to eat a food is because of its coloring. Mm. You know, like if it had a strange color, would I still want to eat it? Like, for example, let's say they put black coloring in butter. Would you eat black butter?
No, I wouldn't. I tend to want to eat things that look the color that they're supposed
to
look.
But who says what it's supposed to look like?
Nature.
No, because some things were clear and now we're adding color to make them more robust. My whole point is, like, how much of that manipulation makes us want to eat that food?
No, but I think we're adding the color to make it look more robust because it loses its color in the processing. So we're trying to make it look more like its natural state. Now, when something doesn't look natural is when I absolutely will 100% avoid it. Like the Black Whopper incident of the 2015s,
Halloween,
where they had
something?
Black hamburger buns.
Yes.
Which had a very unfortunate side effect the next day for people,
you might
owing
want to
the
that.
Amount of food coloring that was in that.
Google that.